AHA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you? Contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
The Darnells. How great. If you've never heard this, this is always funny. Hey, Santa, teach me to dance. The Darnells. All right, a couple of good ones today. The Donnas and the Darnells. I guess that was a theme today that Case pulled out of our At the Races Christmas music, which we take seriously. Jay Pribman takes the turf riding seriously, and throughout his career, which got an added distinction applied to it yesterday with the announcement that the National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame will add Jay to the media roll of honor. It could not be more deserved. And as I wrote last night, there's very few people that have more respect for the game than Jay does. Jay, congratulations.
Thank you, and thanks for the quadrant of fressing as well that you posted last night.
Well, you know, it was funny because I had brought it up on the show when the news broke via a press release, and then also with a text to you. But then I realized I hadn't joined the chorus on social media. So I figured, all right, let me get a good picture. Let me get a good picture of Jay. Well, what I put, you know, you now have a feature on the phone where you put in a name and the facial recognition, I guess, it popped up 80 pictures, Jay, on my phone.
Right. How many of them were food related?
A third, probably. Maybe a third. So I started thumbing through them, and I started sending them. You know, it's easier when you, because you know they go back probably 7 years, give or take, in my phone, and on the iCloud or whatever. And I realized I've got so many great pictures of Jay, and I knew the first one I thought of was the picture of you and Dave Greinig and Dale Romans, which I just love. The morning after Preakness and Dale, I think had won the Black Eyed Susan, but then I realized I got all these great, so many fun pictures. That's why I could put up another 16. I could do four more of those quad photos.
All right, well, control yourself.
Well, you've got to be just, I think I framed this a couple of different ways already yesterday and today. I mean, given the year you've had, and we talked on Friday and in the wake of your birthday celebration, but given the year you've had, what a wonderful way to end the year.
Yeah, no, it was a very, very gratifying thing. And as you know, Joe Hirsch was a great mentor to me when I started out and for years after that, so it was particularly, meaningful to win an award named for him, because not just me, but there's so many other people who of my generation who he was extremely helpful to, a number of whom are on that media roll. So it was really a meaningful honor.
We had, you and I had a sit down I where I do my best Roy Firestone, I should have Casey dig it out because it includes a real retrospective of your career and your coming to the game. But nobody sets out, no matter how ambitious anybody is, nobody sets out thinking, I want to have at the end of my, not that your career's coming to an end, but nobody sets out, thinking about something like this. When the call came, as it were, what else do you think about the way in which your turf riding experience has gone?
Well, the first things that came to mind were all the people who helped me along the way.
Yeah.
Starting with the first break I got at the LA Daily News when they didn't really have a full-time racing rider and I was still in college, and Spectacular Bid had come out for the winter to start his four-year-old campaign, and they didn't have anybody available to cover the Malibu Stakes. And I was a junior in college, working 20 hours a week part-time, mostly just formatting agate for basketball box scores and hockey games and covering Friday night high school football. That was kind of my, what I did. But I said, can I cover that? They're like, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, that was the first thing I ever did, was cover his Malibu Stakes, which is in January of 1980, because back then the Palos Verdes for older sprinters was the opening day feature, and the Malibu was run like maybe the second weekend of the meet to start what was at that time the Stroop Series, with the San Fernando and then the Stroop Stakes. So that was really the first big break I got, and then I was full-time there after I graduated, and for 10 years. And then obviously the next big break I got was when the Racing Times started, and that was a good thing to have happen early on in my career, because not only did I get the blessing of Steve Crist, who by then I had known quite well because we had overlapped for years. He was working at the New York Times. I was at the LA Daily News. Not that there's any comparison between our skill set or our newspapers, but Steve, I became very friendly with, and he hired me to be the West Coast editor, and it was a great experience, because I learned early on that I had no interest in being an editor for the rest of my life. It was not something that I enjoyed, but I was glad I did it then and knew that. And then I did the stuff for the New York Times on the West Coast for 6 years, not only racing, but I did other sports. Whenever a New York team would come to the West Coast, I'd cover like the Devils when they play in Phoenix or Anaheim or L.A. or San Jose or the three Western Canadian cities, things like that. And that was owing to Rich Rosenbusch, who was one of the assistant editors of the New York Times at that time and had edited Steve's copy, and that was my entree there. And then in 98, when Steve and Charlie Hayward acquired the Racing Form, Steve brought me on as national correspondent, and Rich Rosenbusch came over from the Form and was the editor-in-chief. So those are people who've been very influential in my career. And I also thought of people like Andy Beyer, who in the early 80s spent a whole winter at Santa Anita and sat right next to me. And, to sit next to him for, months on end was an incredible learning experience, along with, from a handicapping standpoint, not only him, but Jeff Siegel, who's just a great handicapper and still is to this day. And to be exposed to his thought process, I think really helped accelerate my understanding of the game. So, those people and, Mark Simon at the Thoroughbred Times, who helped me immensely there. Just those were some of the people, Steve, that came to mind immediately, from a writing standpoint.
Was there any point, Jay, that you could have been drawn in a different sports coverage, beat direction?
Yeah, I think if perhaps the New York Times had offered me a full-time position as like a, you know, a hockey writer or something like that, I might have done that. So that could have happened in the, you know, mid to late 90s. But, you know, everything worked out satisfactorily. I mean, racing has always been the sport I wanted to cover, even back when I was working part-time at the LA Daily News in my first job. You know, most people at that point, their goal is to get to maybe covering, you know, the Dodgers or the Lakers or the Kings. I wanted to cover the races, but they didn't really have, at that point, a full-time racing position. But they ended up creating one. You know, one of the things that I bet a lot of people don't even know this story, but the Daily News in the early 80s wanted to really expand their racing coverage, because back then, you know, there's no off-track betting. There's no simulcasting. Everything's done on track. And all the newspapers, the Daily News, the Pasadena Star News, you know, the Long Beach Press Telegram, all the papers in that area had racing sections and sold papers at the track. And it was a pretty big source of revenue for them. And the best racing coverage at that time was in the LA Herald Examiner. And the Daily News tried to poach Gordon Jones from the Herald Examiner. And he basically used that, and I thank him to this day, as leverage to get a better deal out of the Herald Examiner. And because he didn't come over to the Daily News, that allowed me to get promoted to that full-time position. And off we went. But that, you know, who knows what path I'd have been on if Gordon Jones had come to the Daily News at that point. I might have ended up being the Kings writer or something like that. So, you know, there's a lot of things that work out in your favor that are completely out of your control, and that was certainly one of them.
There's been, I don't know if you've even gotten a chance. It's early still. It's coming up on 8:30 on the West Coast, but there's been a gratifying outpouring, Jay, of congratulatory messages, and I'm sure that includes emails and texts. But there was one this morning that kind of caught me a little bit, not off guard per se, but I didn't know Brian Malloy's background, and he mentioned his own editorial experience, and I thought it was nice the way in which Matt Hegarty, you know, framed this election to the Hall, to the media role, the Hirsch media role, really specified about your skills as a writer, you know, saying known for filing clean, in-depth stories quickly. Privman has spent a lifetime owning his craft, and Brian Malloy, came forward and said, not only did he never need to touch your copy, Hegarty's either.
Well, that was very kind of Brian. I saw that he was an editor of mine at the Thoroughbred Times. I was you know, a weekly correspondent for them. And so I worked with Brian for a number of years, and he's a great editor. You know, the best editor is the one who leaves your copy alone, right? No, he was a great editor. And it was very kind of him to reach out. And to your point that you made just before that, yeah, it was one of the really neat things about what happened yesterday was just hearing from people that I've worked with over the years and you know, getting nice notes either on social media or privately. It was really nice. And some of it was from people I haven't worked with or seen for years, but still, they reached out, and it was really nice gestures on their part.
From a writing standpoint, and I know that I discussed this with you when we had that Jay Privman up close and personal session, but I don't remember the answer. So I'm going to ask again.
I remember.
Well, there you go. Who did you read? And I know Jim Murray's got to be in this answer, but who amongst the writers, doesn't have to be confined to sports writing either. I mean, who do you did you ever find yourself emulating or, you know, aspiring to emulate? Whose prose, you know, always captivated you as you, you know, began to understand that, you know, this was a direction you were going to go?
Yeah, well, certainly Jim Murray, obviously, being in the, you know, growing up in the Los Angeles area. You know, and then from a racing standpoint, Gordon Jones or Tom Ainsley was someone I read, you know, even before I ever met him, Andy Beyer, because Picking Winners came out in the late 1970s or mid-1970s, actually, and was, you know, an extremely influential tome, along with his follow-up book, My $50,000 Year at the Races, which seems quaint these days, but back then was actually a, you know, fairly significant amount of money for someone to make just gambling through the course of the year. So those were among the things that or the people that I gravitate towards. But, you know, one thing, Steve, that when I first started out, you know, I read people like, you know, Steve Crist, even before I met him, you know, writing for the New York Times, and seeing the way he wrote, and obviously the way Andy wrote with the at the Post, you know, those were people you wanted to try and emulate. They're even if you couldn't write as gracefully as them, you wanted to at least strive towards that goal.
From that standpoint, and I suppose I should fold in, you know, your broadcast experience as well. I thought it was great that Matt included not just your network roles, but also, you know, your radio. You know, you almost 20 years doing Thoroughbred LA. But what's changed, Jay, and either for the better and for the worse?
Everything. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I started out, you filed your story, and that was it. You know, it wasn't like there was a social media beast that needed to be fed 24/7. If it was breaking news, you know, in the middle of the night or something, it wasn't like you needed to post something to Twitter and update it for the website. It was, you know, whatever came out the next morning in the paper was kind of it for a while. So that's changed more than anything, for the better and for the worse. I mean, there's certainly the immediacy of news. You can get information out quicker, but I think there's, and I've said this in your forum and another number of other places, it's always better to be right than to be first, and I think there's that gets lost way too often. So that's certainly changed from a print standpoint. You know, from a broadcasting standpoint, honestly, I'm not. There's certainly more racing on TV, which is great. You know, the Fox shows and having TVG, the exposure to racing is great. And then from a network standpoint, though, I think the storytelling is still fairly similar to what has been over the years in terms of focusing on features and then good solid race coverage and then having analysts, you know, like Jerry Bailey and Randy Moss. Who are the best at what can be done, analyzing things when it's over. So those are, you know, those are things that part of it hasn't changed. But I think having more of it has been great.
There has been, you know, discussion over the last, I don't know, even just a couple of days, but it doesn't have to be confined just to, you know, to a recent series of tweetings over the last day. But there's been a you know, the concern or the, you know, the question, you know, why are there not, you know, why are we not telling more upbeat stories, uplifting, and telling the, you know, the stories that are more positive. We've got,
and that's just a completely false premise.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, you're making a statement that's just factually not true when you say something like that. I think the news gets covered, and if it's good news, it gets covered, and if it's bad news, it gets covered. But it gets covered, and I think if you look on balance at what is written about leading up to the Derby or the Breeders' Cup, or just on a day-to-day basis, most stories would fall into the quote-unquote positive or benign level of things, whether it's features on a jockey, a trainer, or a horse, or a race advance, or a race recap. I mean, I don't know that you would file those under, you know, quote-unquote bad news, but when there is quote-unquote bad news, it needs to be reported. So I find that notion to just not be true, that people are just focusing on quote-unquote bad news and ignoring quote-unquote what is perceived as good news. It's just not of reality to say that.
And I don't disagree at all. There's also, Jay, the I won't call it a difficulty, but the challenge, let's say, the challenge of being fair and accurate and not being drawn in to what at times has been a cacophony of, you know, of whatever particular topic. Obviously, there's one topic that is dominating the current news cycle since May in the game, but it's not a unique particular topic. We don't have to, you know, go into that. Although we did touch on it Friday, and it produced a series of responses that some people say that if you don't join the torch and pitchfork crowd, that you're being a defender of something. And I know from my own experience in this area, it's a difficult line to walk. And no matter what the topic is or who's been involved, you've always tried to maintain that professionalism and fairness. And it might not be fashionable, but it's obviously a tenet of your approach to journalism.
Well, I just think you need to treat people fairly and based on the facts. And, you know, reporting that Medina Spirit tested positive for a medication that's not legal on race day is a fact. I mean, that happened, and he stands to lose the Kentucky Derby. That is a fact. But to extrapolate a horse unfortunately dying, you know, Medina Spirit last week, to something wider is, to me, going down a path that's not proven. And there are other horses, as I mentioned on your show Friday, that, you know, this is a rare but not unprecedented thing. And what, you know, I think you need to let the facts guide you in this or any other situation, whether it was the Wesley Ward filly who had a cardiac event at Keeneland earlier this year, or Eric Kruljack's horse who had a cardiac event at Del Mar this summer, or now Medina Spirit this fall. You need to see what the autopsy report or the necropsy says. And if there's something untoward in that necropsy report on Medina Spirit, it will be reported, and it will, and people will have to pay for that. But, you know, until and unless there's something like that, I think, as you put it, the mob rule needs to stand down just a little bit. You need to, you know, facts need to guide you in all situations. And it seems as though there's the one, you don't want to be the one person who's in the news each day, and that's become who Bob Baffert is right now. He's become public enemy number one, for better or worse. I'm willing to let the facts guide how his story is presented. And I think that should be the case for him or anybody else in this sport. Whether it's that situation or, you know, a trainer who suddenly wins a bunch of races after having a terrible win percentage all year long, or somebody who has, you know, multiple medication violations. You know, those are things that need to be reported. But the thing that and I've said this on your show before, the thing that I find maddening when it comes to medication is equating, and it's not just with Medina Spirit and the Derby, but there's many other examples of this, equating overages of legal medications with something nefarious and trying to use something that's clearly illegal, which is what, you know, Navarro and Service fall under. You know, those are two completely different things, and I think there is an element in this sport that has tried to meld those as though they're all the same, and they're not.
Jay Pribman with us, and Jay, of course, yesterday added to the Joe Hirsch Media Roll of Honor at the Hall of Fame, which means we're going to see you here this summer. That's good news. We got to pry you out of the home game.
I'll do my best.
What we'll talk on Tuesday. They're going to draw Monday, Santa Anita. There's nothing to preview on Friday, so that motivated Jay joining us here in the wake of his election to the Hall. We'll talk opening day at Santa Anita on Tuesday, the last show of the year. But as a parting question, Jay, what else would you like to do in turf riding?
I don't know. I enjoy what I do. I'm, you know, grateful that I'm still able to do it, especially, you know, like you were talking about, you know, the health challenges I had with the bladder cancer earlier this year and the major surgery I needed. I mean, that, you know, to be able to bounce back from that and now kind of be going back full time again is really gratifying. I was glad I was able to be at the Breeders' Cup. I'm really eager to cover the Triple Crown this year. I haven't done it either of the last 2 years, in 2020 owing to COVID, and then, you know, this past year owing to my health situation in the spring and summer. So that's kind of what I want to do. I don't have any grandiose things that I want to do. There's not some book I want to write or anything of that standpoint. I enjoy what I'm doing and want to do it for as long as I, you know, continue to enjoy doing it. And I don't have some grand you know, plan that I'd like to do. What I'd like to do is have some people that are coming up through the ranks maybe look at the approach that, you know, myself or others take and realize that it's, you know, you don't have to be first, but you do need to be right about how you handle things. And it's not just with medication. You know, there's so many other things in the sport that need to be addressed properly. I mean, this current ongoing, embarrassing, inexcusable situation with the timing of races is a joke. Mm. You know, and the same people behind melding illegal medication with overages of legal medications are the ones who are not correcting the situation, and, you know, shame on them. Those are things I'd like to see addressed in equal fashion, because it all of these things impact horse players, and if you don't have horse players and horse players don't have confidence in the game, then everybody suffers from that, purse money, etc. So Those are things I'd like to see addressed in 2022. Not going to hold my breath for it, but I'd like to see it happen.
DRF Privman, and just a wonderful distinction added to a already distinguished career. And Jay, we will look forward to a year-ending visit to look to opening day at Santa Anita. So we'll wait for the overnight on Monday and talk Tuesday.
Yeah, that card should be terrific. There's six graded stakes, the two or three grade ones, the Malibu, the La Brea, and the American Oaks. So it should be a great card, and certainly looking forward to that. And boy, isn't it nice to have, like, at least out here, and I wish it was elsewhere too, a nice little break between meets to get you geared up and anxious and eager again for a race season to start, as opposed to just droning on. It's really a welcome little respite here.
Agreed, and we're going to have one, you know, after Sunday in New York as well, and you know, something that Hammer, you know, he for years spoke to that, and that it wasn't imperative to end on Sunday and start on Wednesday.
Right.
You're just like, geez, you know, it was one thing when you had, you know, when you had the, you know, the fair circuit is something different, you know, where the, where those fair meets, you know, where they kind of lay in, but that's a different thing. And actually a different era, but no, I agree. It's good for the horses. It's good for the horsemen. It's good for just, you know, for everybody. And I thought that yesterday it was appropriate when I had the opportunity, knowing that we were going to talk today, when I had the opportunity to feature Daryl Viena and Gilded Time. I picked up a piece that Jay had written for the New York Times. I thought that was a perfect, there was a certain harmony, Jay, to that inclusion yesterday on the show listing.
Yeah, no, that was a fun story to just see. I have very vivid memories of that morning watching Gilded Time Breeze and talking to Daryl Viena and David Milch and doing that piece, because it was a, you know, ambitious thing, and they almost pulled it off. He ran third in the sprint on the comeback after being off for a year. It was a heck of a performance. So yeah, that was fun. That was a good one to, that was. Appreciated you posting that.
No, I got a big kick out of it. Because I was actually looking for was just a picture of the horse, and you know, a lot of times horses from that era you can't really find you can't find a good sized picture. They always end up being like thumbnails, and so when I saw that, it was among, you know, the search results, I was like, oh my God, I'm using Jay's piece from special. That's got to feel pretty good when you look and you see your byline. Bylines are always fun, but when it says special to the Times, that that had to be okay.
Yeah, that was their that was the phraseology they used if you weren't in New York. It was a special report from somewhere else in the world.
Well, and I, you know, my I've got my share of those that as a stringer, and you know, that when you were, you know, when I was in college and wrote for the local newspaper, and you know, special to the Dispatch, and then I actually was on the staff, and that, you know, that was different. Then you become Dispatch staff writer and so forth. But You appear in the pages of the newspaper of record. That's just part of a Hall of Fame career. Now, when you sign your name now, are you going to be like professional athletes and put HOF?
No. And there's two reasons for that. First off, I wouldn't do that. Secondly, who the heck would even want my autograph? So no.
Jay Privet, everybody. Jay, congratulations again from everybody, all of our listeners, and everybody who appreciates how hard you work and how seriously you take the game.
Thanks, Steve. I really appreciate it.
Jay Privet, folks. Seth Merrow standing by. We got about 10-12 minutes with Seth, and he's getting ready, I'm sure, for some Tampa and Gulfstream action. Seth, good morning.
You got it. We live vicariously this time of year, looking at some Florida racing, and that's going to be on the game plan this afternoon, some Tampa and Gulfstream. But first, just let me congratulate Jay. That was great when that news came out from the Hall of Fame that he's amongst the Joe Hirsch Media Honor Roll winners this year. Deserved accolades for Jay Privet.
Well, it comes at a, you know, at the end of a year, it gives them a, you know, a nice Nice way to end.
And it was interesting to hear him talk about, I have had up at Saratoga that skip on and, the photographers up there, and we talk about it all the time, but it was interesting to hear him talk about, from the print side of things, just how much the game has changed, over the time he has been doing it, significantly so. You know, you talk to the photographers, as I say, and it's completely different from them. You know, they just have to go and develop film and send in pictures. And now, at the end of the day, they have, a ton more pictures than they had, and they just have to click through on their phone and pick them up, and it emails out, and so it's completely different. But it was interesting to hear his perspective on how different it has become also for the writers and the writing side of the game, and how social media has changed things for them.
No doubt. But Jay, Jay's got that watchword, and the first concern, which we all, any and all of us do, which is, get it right first and foremost. You don't need to be first. You just have to make sure you're right. That's the priority. So, and I know it's the way Jay approaches anything that's happening. So. It's good advice for aspiring, as Jay put just now a little bit ago, for aspiring writers, broadcasters, etc. Seth, I'm sorry I couldn't be with you on Sunday to do our traditional gift guide, but it did make me laugh a little bit this morning, knowing it was Wednesday and I was going to talk to you. I went looking at the Facebook memories, and exactly a year ago, on December 15th, we were doing the gift guide. So how about a quick volley of gift ideas, as we want to do?
When you shot me a text this morning and said, toss out some gift ideas, I was kind of wondering, where to go. And along the same lines, you talk about how things have changed for the photographers and the writers. Well, for the handicappers, things have really changed compared to when you and I got in the game. I mean, we each have, you've mentioned it over the past few months, going and looking in your storage area, pulling out the broadsheet racing form, and you hear Andy Serling talk about it every once in a while up in Saratoga. There would be the downtown where the advanced edition, that was a big thing, when you can get the racing form the day before and it would appear at the local newsstand, but of course now everything's online. But something folks may think about for a horse racing fan, these days there are all kinds of different services that are available, but one of the quickest and easiest and most efficient and useful is just Formulator. Maybe get somebody a Formulator subscription and let them try it out, because it is 21st century handicapping now, where you can plug in the things that kind of stand out to you, the factors that stand out to you. We see the handicappers at the various tracks on their pregame shows taking a look at these stats. That's where they're coming up, either racing, Formulator or RaceLens, Stats RaceLens, those kind of things. But you can do it yourself with a Formulator subscription, and it's pretty easy. I mean, the learning curve is not steep to be able to parse out how this trainer does off this kind of a layup with these type of horses, et cetera, et cetera. But again, it adds a new and a 21st century tool to your toolbox. So maybe think about upgrading the racing person in your life's handicapping toolbox with some of those products. And I'll toss out one. When you brought it up, I had to go online and look because I couldn't remember the name for sure, but now I've got it. A board game I played as a kid, I had three or four friends that were also racing fans, and one of them had the board game that was a lot of fun. And the thing that stuck out to me, that one of the horses, you buy horses, and then you run races, and you have programs, and there's money in the game, and there's a fold-out board with a track on it. And one of the horses in the game was named Mona Lisa, and I can just remember every time that horse's name came up, I would sing Mona Lisa. So it stuck in my brain. And I looked online, and I was trying to remember the name of the game, and I typed in, you know, the name, the horse racing board game, and came up with it. And it's available. You can find it on eBay and a few other places. It's called Win, Place, and Show. And as say, I haven't played it in years, but I remember it being a lot of fun. And so that's another option. I mean, a lot of the games that I was looking and finding on eBay, all the pieces are still there and everything. And I saw one of the programs on eBay, and sure enough, Mona Lisa was in there, so I'm sure that's the game. It's Win, Place, and Show. And again, people can maybe look that up and have some fun.
Well, when you get that for me for Christmas, I also want that password, the password box that we talked about, or concentration.
I have to see if that's on eBay too.
The books, I'll put these up on Twitter, but I want to mention Lenny's book, of course, which has really been, I've seen so many nice compliments about Lenny's book, Head to Head. This was the compilation of Lenny's interviews over a period of time at Blood Horse, Conversations with a Generation of Horse Racing Legends, and it's really nice. I appreciate Jennifer Kelly letting me know that, reminding me that we actually had Jamie Nicholson. And Jamie wrote a fascinating book about, it's called Racing in America, Racing for America, and about a much underreported and underappreciated match race. And same time, he also has got any of his other titles are all worth when you go visit it at any bookstore link. I don't want to specifically mention a giant monolith. Try to buy from some of the resources. There's quite a few that pull from independent bookstores, and I try to do that if you could. I'll put up a link or two to those. And one thing that I was reminded of from last year that people might not top of the mind, Greg Montgomery's artwork, Seth. Go to Greg's website. I'll put that up. Greg Montgomery, pick out one of the Travers posters or any of his other terrific artwork. And if you got a Saratoga lover on your list, they'll love one of Greg's Travers posters. If you know that, you know, there was a certain Travers that is one of their favorites or a favorite horse, you can figure it out. I'll put the link up to his website. And it doesn't, you know, I don't have to just confine it to Greg. There's, any number of equine art resources. So consider that. Everybody loves getting artwork and photography. Bob Coglini's photos. Adam, I'll put up Adam's email. You can write to Adam Coglini's, and Adam will ask a specific New York racing win picture, or he's got historical. They've got access. His dad's work. They've got decades of the photography at NYRA. So there's a photograph too that people would love having. So there's some ideas, and I'll put it all out on Twitter after I come back from the cardiologist. Seth, how about a play or two today, quick?
The Gulfstream in the eighth. I think the Gargan horse Kasim is going to take the action, but I put Cable Channel on top at 5-1. I thought the race two back in Kentucky Downs was pretty good, and if we get back to that, maybe that horse will be a little bit intriguing. But again, it's probably going to go through the Gargan horse. I put that one a little down in my mix just because the horse hasn't been seen since September at Presque Isle. That was on the synthetic, has run well on the turf before, though. So I'm using Kasim, but I thought Golf Channel was better. I have that one on top. Cable Channel, put that one on top. And in the ninth at Gulfstream, Mr. Matusek, I don't know if we'll get the 4-1. I think if we do get the 4-1, the horse is very, very interesting. Coming off the win on the synthetic claim, moves to Peter Walder, I think should be live again today. So at 4-1, number 6, Mr. Matuszek, and the 9th at Gulfstream as well.
Seth Merrow, and he'll be on Capital OTB. Speaking of cable channels, hey now.
Oh, we should toss out. I thought of this earlier too. For folks who maybe plan ahead their gift giving, if you're in Saratoga next year, we mention it often. Swing by Lyrical Ballad and comb through their collection, and you can come up with a gift next year for the person on your list. Again, it will require a visit to Saratoga, but that's never bad.
Well, and our friend Leslie Knopf. Leslie has a wonderful suggestion. National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame, their gift shop has got an online. And Keeneland gift shop, famously, as well. More great ideas. There it is. Articles of clothing. I mean, it's endless.
And toss out give a donation to one of the racing charities on somebody's behalf. Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation.
Yep.
Chaplaincy.
Nice.
Best.
Nice.
Yeah, all great charities.
All right. That's it. Seth Merrow, everybody. Jay Pribman. John Parada. Thoroughbred Investor's Bible. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale and Dick Powell, HKJC. Good luck today, everybody, if you're playing. I put up Gus. Gus has got the 5th through the 9th at Gulfstream for you. Okay? Talk to you tomorrow.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.